They have, like, boozy milkshakes that are actually legit pretty good.
I mean, I've had good boozy milkshakes in other places. I don't know if I need to go for it.
Oh, have you?
There's a chain, I think it's based in Pennsylvania.
Man, for giggling so much, I think.
It's called Burgatory.
You've mentioned this place before.
Burgatory.
Ooh,
and they used to have a really
that.
Terrific, well, they used to, it wasn't alcoholic. They had other ones that were alcoholic. They used to have, like, a breakfast cereal milkshake that was, like, Fruit Loops and a vanilla milkshake, like, ground up together.
I don't know how I'd feel
good
about that, but that sounds...
You feel good.
It sounds interesting.
You feel transient.
And they took it off the menu.
But why?
Because I wasn't there enough to buy it.
Well, Brandon's not coming
yeah.
around much anymore.
Twice a year it spikes. We don't know what to do.
We can't take off the menu. We don't know if another spike is coming. the reason why I was on my phone is my friend Ryan is up in Portland, Maine, and he was just texting me to say that he was at a restaurant that I really fucking love to death called Duck Fat. But like they fry, he was like, I'm eating their fries. They make their fries in duck fat, and it's amazing.
Well, I've had actually that before, not there, but I've had them made in like animal fat. It's
so
good.
Yeah. What made me think of it is they make a duck fat milkshake, and it was never clear about whether or not they put duck fat in it or if it's called the duck fat milkshake because the restaurant
duck
is duck fat. But I will actually tell you this. It was probably the best milkshake I've ever had.
So wait, was there duck fat in it?
I don't know.
Mystery remains to this day.
I don't know. And I felt stupid asking, and I was like, it doesn't matter. This is delicious. Even if there is duck fat, I'm committed to this.
I mean, to be fair, whenever I had a Five Guys milkshake, I was like, are they calling it this because it's at Five Guys, or are there really
five
men ground up
in this milkshake?
That's why there's so much protein.
It wasn't very good, so I could have.
Where some friends get together to watch a deeply troubled movie and then talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how to fix it, all with a hopefully delicious cocktail to try to take some of the edge off. I am Chris Coffee in Paris Revelle.
And I am Brendan Cerf the Maldives Strichler.
And with us is a very special guest. Returning to us from the Jack the Giant Slayer episode is... Introduce yourself.
I am Meg Knapp on Mount Kilimanjaro Coin.
Yay!
Yay!
Welcome back, Meg!
Thank you for coming back, Meg.
It's a pleasure to be
back. You came from the other coast of the country.
I did. Guest
just for
guest
this.
From the west.
Returns.
Yes.
Just for this. You
just
don't have family
this.
To see or other
no,
friends.
No.
This is it.
This is all it. I'm getting right on the red eye after this.
This is the level of importance that this podcast should hold for all of
for
our listeners.
I believe we did that shtick last time, though, where Meg had to leave right after the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. You're right. Well, I like to recycle. So if you couldn't tell by our really weird nicknames, we did the Hayden Christensen movie Jumper.
Directed by Doug Liman, of all people.
Yeah. And who was a pretty reputable director.
He did Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which was
great.
It was a great movie. Came out in 2008.
Yes.
Co-starring Rachel Bilson and
Sam Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson and,
A
bit part from Diane Lane.
And
Jamie Bell.
Jamie Bell!
Dear Jamie Bell.
And also like a blink and you miss a cameo from Kristen Stewart. We're going to get into all of that. But before we really dig in, Brenda, why don't you tell us about the cocktail?
Sure. So the drink we made is called a jump scar. We made it in a pitcher. So, you know, these are big portions for a big pitcher. One bottle of Prosecco, 1 cup of San Pellegrino Limonata, 3/4 cup honey, basically a whole thing of basil. Just threw it in.
A lot of basil.
We just threw it all in there. And I made some ice
beaucoup
cubes.
Basil.
Yes, beaucoup basil. And I made some strawberry ice cubes, which was really easy. It's just pureed strawberries, a little bit of lemon juice, some sugar, and water. And we froze them, and we plopped those strawberry ice cubes in the drink after we had already mixed everything else in so that it could melt with the drink and change the flavor a little bit, because it's our little jumper jumping into the drink itself, leaving behind a jump scar.
I took a sip of it before the cube dissipated in my glass, and it almost just tasted like straight honey. But then when the strawberry kind of broke it up a little bit, more of the basil came through, the Prosecco gave it really nice little zing. It was lovely.
The strawberry helps a lot, because I feel like
it does.
On first taste, I'm like, that is a lot of basil. A lot of basil flavor hitting. And then just kind of the more the strawberry ice cube melts, the tastier it gets. So
yeah,
it's a good call.
Again, as a gimmicky drink, I'd 100% not recommend drinking this without the ice melting first. Like, you could just throw it in, but where's the fun in that? So we thought we would do something a little differently. But yes, 100% let the ice melt.
I thought it was a more successful cocktail than this movie. Because as this movie went along, it did not get tastier.
Mm-mm.
No.
It got...
it got more and more bitter.
Yeah.
Like too much Thai basil.
Like too much Thai basil. Anyway, would you like to read us the Wikipedia article that sums up this interminable movie?
Yes, I would. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, 15-year-old David Rice gives his crush, Millie Harris, a snow globe. A bully throws it onto a frozen river. While trying to retrieve it, David falls through the ice and is pulled away by the current. He suddenly finds himself in the local library and discovers his ability to jump from one place to another. Amazed with his new ability, he leaves his abusive father, Michael Rooker, and runs away from home. 8 years later, an adult David, Hayden Christensen, lives lavishly on stolen money. One day, he is ambushed in his home by Roland Cox, Samuel L. Jackson, a member of the Paladins, a group of religious extremists who have been tracking down and killing jumpers. Their reasoning is that jumpers' alleged omnipresence is considered blasphemous. Roland tries to capture David with electric cables designed to nullify his ability, but David escapes. He returns to Ann Arbor, seeking his old crush, Millie. When Mark attacks him, David teleports him into a bank vault and leaves him there. David then returns to Millie and invites her on a trip to Rome. The two fly there, and Roland later discovers Mark in police custody and learns David's identity. David and Millie arrive in Rome, though he has kept his ability a secret. After talking, they share a kiss and have sex.
Yep.
They visit the Colosseum, where David meets Griffin, Jamie Bell, another jumper. A group of paladins appear, and Griffin casually kills them, then jumps away. Real Kaz.
Cash cow.
Dude's cash.
David tries to leave with Millie, but he's detained by the Italian police and questioned about his deaths. About the deaths. David's mother, Mary, Diane Lane, who had left when he was 5, appears and helps him escape. She urges him to leave Rome with Millie to protect her. Millie, upset and afraid when David tries to skirt around the issue, demands to know the truth. David declines and puts her on a plane home. David runs into Griffin again and follows him to his hideout in a cave. Griffin reveals that he has been trailing and killing paladins for years and plans to kill Roland to avenge his parents. David sees Mary's photo on the wall and realizes she is also a paladin. Griffin tells David that the paladins will target his loved ones to draw him out. David teleports home and finds his father lying bleeding. He gets his father to a hospital and returns to Griffin to ask for help. Realizing Roland is personally hunting David, Griffin agrees. They go back to pick Millie up at the airport, but she is no longer there. Griffin returns to his hideout to get weapons. David breaks into Millie's apartment, angering her. Seeing Roland arriving, David decides to reveal the truth to her. He teleports her to Griffin's hideout. Using a machine that keeps David's jump scar open, the paladins, including Roland, invade the hideout. David and Griffin subdue most of them. Roland is chased back through the jump scar, but he manages to snatch Millie with him. He sets up a trap in Millie's apartment, expecting David to come back for her. Obsessed with killing Roland, Griffin plans to bomb the apartment, but David objects, wanting to save Millie. They fight, and David traps Griffin with power lines in Chechnya.
As you do.
Oh, Christ. Ignoring Griffin's warning, David jumps to Millie's apartment and is quickly trapped by Roland's cables. The cables link him to the apartment, making him unable to jump away alone. Mustering his strength, David teleports the apartment and everyone inside to a river. Once free of the cables, David teleports Millie to safety and dumps Roland in a cave in the Grand Canyon. He leaves Roland there, explaining that not all jumpers are a threat to be destroyed. David visits his mother and discovers his half-sister, Sophie, Kristen Stewart. Mary tells David that when she was 5, he made his first jump. She is a paladin and had to either kill David or leave. After leaving her house, David meets with Millie outside and they jump to an unknown location.
With a cool whooshing snow.
That's right.
To end it all.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
The movie itself isn't that long, but that...
I know, I was going to say, that synopsis seems a lot longer.
It really does. It's 90 minutes long, and it's one of the shortest movies I think we've ever done, if not possibly the shortest. It does feel longer, but I will say the one thing it has going for it is shorter than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
There was something I didn't realize I was confused about until you got into it in the recap. So, I mean, we can just jump into this element right now.
I'm curious, though, real quick, actually. You hadn't seen this before, right?
No,
I'm
not.
You watch it for this. Meg, you and I had?
I saw it in theaters.
Okay.
Back in the days of 2008.
Did you have a big crush on Hayden Christensen?
Hayden Christensen?
Yeah, for real.
It was either Hayden Christensen or Jamie Bell that I went to see it for.
Okay.
I'm going to err more on the side of Jamie Bell because I have seen most of his oeuvre.
How much of that is you saying that now? Just like,
no,
seeing
it's
very
true.
Clearly.
Have you
always had a thing for...
Yeah. Brendan can confirm.
Yes.
I have, would you like to see, like, I have, like, I go through periods where I go through, like, I want to follow the specific actor
mm-hmm.
through every kind of movie that they're in, regardless of quality, so I have a lot of interesting movie DVDs that I bought on Amazon for $3. I'm like, hey, this actor that I like is in it, so I have, like, The Chum Scrubber, which
yep.
I liked. I've watched a lot of movies with Jamie Bell in it.
Nice, okay.
Yeah. Possibly regrettable at
Did you have this on DVD?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I already had it on DVD.
Because
so
I think I saw it because you had it on DVD when we were in college.
Oh, we may,
together.
I may have.
Because I had a burned copy of it for a long time from college, which must have been like
probably
ripped it from your DVD.
So,
and
yes,
now
so
I bought the Blu-ray. I've
had this for, God, like 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, just about, so, yeah.
In follow-up question,
mm-hmm.
is Hayden Christensen attractive? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Tough. It's weird because I look at him and I think, like, all the pieces put together are, like, on paper attractive, and
mm-hmm.
I can see how objectively I'm like, sure, he's a good-looking guy.
Mm.
I don't feel attracted to him.
Well, is it because he's a bad actor?
I think it's because he's a bad actor. I think it's because his face looks very vacant, and I think his looks to me are very cold. I don't have anything that is drawing me in
No,
there.
He does have, like a dark sort of look to him. To be fair, he was good in Shattered Glass because he was playing, like, a creepy bastard.
Right.
I guess I'm into that. And
yeah.
then in Life as a House, he's kind of, like,
he's like
angsty
a teenager.
Is
yeah.
right.
He's like, oh, this is the role that
yeah,
I
Yeah, so he's supposed
to be,
like, dramatic and, like, angry all the time.
He can do that. He's also, for any big fans of, or any remote fans of Hayden Christensen, the Canadian teen soap Higher Ground, which I
yes.
think I first saw him. He was very good in. That whole soap is
that's
great.
What got him in Star Wars.
Yeah,
really?
it's a
yeah.
great show in general, but his performance in that is why I feel a little bit bad when people bag on him for his performance.
Yeah, I know.
He's not a stellar actor. I'm
no,
sure
but he has been,
listening.
Like,
but he's
good
more
in things.
Competent,
yeah.
I think, than people will give him.
Yeah, and also, like, I feel like if you looked at a picture of him, if I was, like, casting people based on looks alone for Star Wars, I'd be like, oh yeah, this kid looks like, you know, like, he has some issues.
He's got that
like
dark
he's
look, like
yeah,
saying.
He's cute, but he looks
dark
like kind of troubled. So yeah.
Yeah.
I can see why you would think, just looking at him, that he might be someone you want in a movie.
It's such an oddly complicated question though to ask, like, is he attractive?
It is. Like, I do think he is. That's
hot or not.
Yes. Who wore it better? David Prowse or Hayden Christensen?
David Prowse
yeah.
all the way.
Yeah. What a hottie.
And
that northern accent.
I
would err on the side of yes, I think he's attractive. So that made
But are you attracted to him?
In a way.
Like, do you personally find him attractive?
I feel like if he wasn't saying things.
See, that's what I'm saying. I feel like I've reached a point where, like, I can't separate the two.
It's rough.
It's like, you're so shitty, but you are kind of attractive.
He's cute. I feel like if I met him in real life, I would be like, oh, like, this is a fine guy. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, if I'm basing it off of what I've seen him do in movies, probably not so much, but if I met him, like, at, like, Star Wars Celebration or something, I could be like, oh, yeah, like, I get this.
Right, okay.
Anyhow,
he's
I just wanted to throw
Maybe
that out
Maybe he's
there.
Very warm in person.
Could
yeah,
be.
Who knows?
Like a sandy desert, warm like sand.
Sand gets
rough.
Everywhere,
yeah.
He hates it so much. Just to kind of get into...
To jump into
to,
our first
to
category.
To jump... Well, there was one particular note that came up in your recap that you got off of Wikipedia
yeah.
that really stuck in my head that I did not realize I was confused about until now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, jumping in this world
yes.
is... It's essentially teleportation.
Right.
But sometimes it's just a snap from one place to the other... But other times, there's a jump scar left.
I think there's always a jump scar left.
But not always in the movie,
mm-hmm.
because there are times where it's like a really, like, short jump. There's no
mm-hmm.
scar opened up behind him.
I think there's always
There's
one.
Always a scar, they just don't linger on it.
Yeah,
unless
I think
they,
sometimes
like,
they make a point to show
device.
It. But I'm pretty sure it's always there.
Because, like, he, like, jumps in the car, and I didn't see it, and, like, he jumps across his apartment, and I didn't see it then, either.
I mean, there were times whenever I was like, oh, surely there won't be one here, and then there was one. So, like, I
okay.
feel like they were pretty on top of keeping that consistent.
Okay, then that's bananas, because then he did that jump scare across that crowded bar. Someone's just gonna, like...
But you can't walk,
say,
you can't go into it, though.
Yeah, I think
only jumpers.
I think for short-range jumping, if he's just, like, in the same room, there's not a scar, but if he's going from, like, one end of the world to the other, that's where the scar is.
Okay.
He's hopping from place to place.
What's kind of being segued into here is, explain jumpers to me.
Oh, my God. I don't know that I can. I mean, essentially, they are teleporting.
Right. On a base level, They teleport.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. There's nothing complicated about that. We're all familiar with this as a concept.
Various distances.
Right. Well, so there doesn't seem to be a rule about distance in terms of how far you can go,
mm-hmm.
because I was surfing at the Maldives, and I had coffee in Paris, and then I banged a hot Polish chick.
No, he just got her digits.
Yeah, I know.
There also doesn't seem to be a rule, because I was thinking about when I was watching this for the first time, like in X-Men, Nightcrawler can only teleport to a place that he can visualize or otherwise physically see.
I think it does follow Nightcrawler rules, because they show him looking at pictures in the book. So I think if he sees the picture, he can be like, this is where I want to go.
Okay.
That's my, like, reach.
So, like, if...
I think it's Nightcrawler rules.
Okay.
Except Nightcrawler has more trouble with long distances.
He does. Yeah.
I thought it established at some point that, like, he has to... Either one of the characters says it or, like... Because they do show David looking at pictures in a book, so you can kind of...
Right,
make that
yeah.
But I feel like there's some little snippet of exposition where it's like it has to be something that he's familiar with.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, that's why he teleports to the library.
He teleports to the library.
Yeah.
Well, then there's also the scene when he's first run away to New York... Where he's just kind of having a memory about his mom, and he gets teleported to the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
He's not looking at a picture of the Empire State Building.
I thought he is. He's flipping. He has the book open. He's like, "I've already been there." And then
he
like thinks about it, and then he pops up there.
Yeah. So
I mean,
maybe that was.
It probably would have been a stronger scene, frankly, if he wasn't looking at a picture of the Empire State Building and then just thought about his mother.
Although,
and then was teleported there.
Yeah.
And I know this was a deleted scene, so maybe this doesn't really have much weight. But
not canonical.
I guess it is technically, but. You showed us a deleted scene that was the alternate opening to this movie, which had him, he's like rolling out of bed or into bed or something, and then
he's taking a pee.
I'm sorry.
And then he jumps to his bed, and then he jumps from his bed to his childhood bed.
Right. But it seems to be almost like...
It's a sleep jump.
But
right.
He does admit, yeah, he seems to be kind of like rolling over
in his adult
bed and then in the process jumps to his
childhood
room.
So in that situation, instead of looking at a physical picture, he just like, without realizing it, imagined that in his head and went there.
Right, because he also says, it was hard to hear with the air conditioning on, but they show him later talking to a therapist and he says something like, I dreamed about my childhood home last night. And so, like, I think it's partly that, like, he is dreaming about it, but I think he was also partly being as, like, I teleported to my childhood bedroom last night. But I think it does seem to imply that he's having some sort of, like, unresolved mental issue with you know, obviously the fact that he just, like, left home.
Which could have been interesting.
Yeah.
And yet
right.
That's not a thread we follow.
Nope.
No.
And, okay, so we have jumpers kind of down
yeah.
in that
well,
way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any other detail we're missing?
I'm trying to... So, it's very confusing to me, the mechanics of jumping. More so, like, how you become a jumper. The implication,
oh, okay.
I guess, is that it's a genetic thing. Because his mom says, like,
right.
David just jumped on his own when he was 5 years old. Griffin
jumper
says...
Jumper puberty is apparently at five.
Yes.
Like, for some reason,
well, also,
your jumper ability gets...
Yeah, they all mentioned... They both mentioned, like, jumping at age five.
But also, everything ever... Important.
It's
five.
Yes.
Yeah. Five was
mom
a very big year.
Like, yes. Well, mom left because he
I know,
couldn't
but,
jumper. But also, yes, and then also that's how he knew he would love Millie forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, your best and most portentous years are behind you.
Yeah. Sorry.
It all happened at five.
So, I guess it's a genetic thing because they don't. It doesn't seem to be like something you can learn how to do because it's not like. There are books or something involved. It's not like there's, like,
I think
like,
Roland would have figured it out
yeah.
at this point.
It's also just super weird, though, that they never kind of put a stamp on it as, like, a... It is genetic, or, like, it's, like,
right.
it's
mutant left,
power.
It's left so vague. Like, no questions are answered about jumping.
I wouldn't care so much about that if the rest of the movie didn't suck. Which it does, so then I do care about that. Do you know what I mean?
Touché.
So, like, if I were to have seen that movie in theaters, and I left it being, like, oh, that was so much fun, and then, like, 2 days later, I was, like... But how? Like, what was jumping? Like, what did this all mean?
Okay, I think part of the problem from that stems from you only really seeing two jumpers in this movie. One of them is David, who doesn't know what he's doing. And the other one is Griffin, who seems to have more experience, but doesn't tell him a whole lot because he doesn't show up until, like, the last half of the movie or so.
Yeah.
And... That's it. That's the problem. You have one character. It's like if Harry Potter started doing magic all by his own, and then, like, halfway through the movie, Dumbledore showed up and was like, oh, incidentally, you're a wizard now. That's why you've been doing this. And he was like, oh, okay.
There also seemed to be, like, a real... And it was very half-hearted, but I was sort of picking up on this thread in the movie where Jamie Bell's character, Griffin, essentially seems to believe that being a jumper is synonymous with just being sort of, like, amoral. And that's sort of borne out by a lot of David's behavior leading up to that point. Because he's not necessarily evil, but he just doesn't care, right?
So can only jerks become jumpers?
It seems that way.
Okay.
Yeah, but we only see two, and they're both
jerks.
Kind of jerks. Although one,
Griffin is a cool jerk.
One's just more watchable than the other.
Cool jerk!
Cool jerk! Let's watch Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
I would honestly love to.
Right now.
Find Hayden Christensen jumping in the background. He's CGI'd in like he was at the end of episode 6.
I love it.
What?
That's actually what George Lucas...
Tim Curry is supposed to be!
That's actually what George Lucas wants to do.
He's the pigeon lady at the end.
Oh, no!
Oh, Brenda Fricker. Where have you gone?
The one last thing I just wanted to point out about jumping is it's sort of an interesting detail that when he's a kid and he jumps, there's, like, physical damage done.
Yeah,
by the time he's an adult.
Well, see, yeah, my assumption is maybe that, like, when you're first trying to figure it out, you, like... You can't control it, so you damage the area around you as you jump.
That makes sense.
And I guess that maybe when he teleports his dad to the hospital, like, because it was an emotionally traumatic moment, like, that's why. This is my guess, because I could not tell you, because the movie doesn't fucking explain anything about jumping.
Well, and again, like, even if they didn't have straightforward exposition, they give us no indication. It just sort of happens.
Yeah, just like, so this is this, and go with it.
Yeah.
To Brendan's point, I think it is sort of supposed to be like a control issue, and supposedly as you get more used to it, you're kind of more conscious of how you're moving in this space.
Right,
so
because I mean, like, he's not, like, destroying his couch as he's, like, jumping onto it.
Right.
Which is pretty hilarious. He's like,
I can't reach the remote, better jump.
Just choose the remote.
Also, this bothered me in the movie when Roland is coming to kidnap him and, like, he can't open a door, and Roland's like, can't open a door, can't you? And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yours, my old arch nemesis.
Like, I understand getting used to jumping, but I'm like, can this guy not handle
the damn door
now?
He seems to be very cavalier about who he jumps in front of, too, so, like, why didn't he just jump away at that
point? He's stupid to begin with. You forget how to use a door from not using it. But it also was like not a complicated door.
Yeah. My thought is that maybe Roland had like locked it or barricaded
maybe,
or something. That's my only guess.
Like,
again, much like, you know, is jumping damaging?
I thought he had like electro wired it or something. Like when he touched it, he would get zapped.
But he didn't see,
It's not like there was like 20 padlocks on it. He was like, oh crap, I forgot the combination boop a boop. It was like, I can't get the. How does the knob work?
How do knob work?
How do knob help you? Sorry, that was just. I had a lot of sticking points in that movie.
I also pointed out to Brendan when we were watching it.
I just really love it if, like, at the end, Sam Jackson has him trapped in a room full of doors. And he's like, no!
Crazy electrical wiring. Just put him out of the doors.
I would have loved if it was knobs and then, like, some were sliding doors and some were, like, latch doors.
How does it work?
This is a trap door.
There's more than one kind?
This is a bulkhead.
It's just so funny. I didn't even pick up on the fact that he's fucking struggling with the door.
He is.
Because that's how lazy it is. But I like...
Oh, my God.
Because, I get that I'm used to... Because Griffin does a nice mention of this when they're walking in Tokyo, and David's just like, why don't you just teleport? Griffin's like, because I like walking. I like to feel
normal
once in a while. So that's, like, a good way to do it
And that's right before they hop into a car that Griffin teleports all around Tokyo.
Yes.
There's also a scene in which... David Hayden Christensen is taking Millie. I fucking hate that name.
Yeah.
Such
a grandma name.
It really is.
No offense to our grandma listeners.
Yeah, no offense
to
my grandmother Millie.
It is of a time that is not now.
Why not just be Millicent?
That's even weirder.
I don't know. I like Millicent. But wait, okay, so
like
here's the thing, too. So
Millicent?
In the books, like in the one of the follow-ups, the last two books, because this is, of course, based off of a young adult novel.
Yes.
The second one is like a direct sequel that follows David and Millie. And the third one, it's about their daughter, who's also named Millicent, and they call her Scent.
Oh, really?
Which is even dumber.
I really don't go for that at all. Scent.
Scent.
And is it like apostrophe
scent?
Scent
of a jumper.
No, just scent. Like, C-E-N-T.
I don't
scent.
Like that at all.
Like
50, but without the...
No, but
yeah,
when
like Fitty, but without...
Like Fitty, but without the Fitty.
Well, yeah, Fitty minus Fitty.
Fitty without the Millie.
Yeah.
But no, when he's taking Millie to Rome, they take a plane. And I know that that's because he doesn't want to, like, immediately...
Like, obviously.
Because then that's a lot to explain. It's also a lot to explain, by the way, of, like, you thought I drowned in that river, but I'm alive and an adult now.
Yes.
And so are you.
Yeah.
And you live,
yeah.
And you live a sad life in the bar.
Come back in the bar.
In the bar?
You live under a bar stool.
Under it.
Virtually. But it, I had turned to Brendan and I was like, I feel like they missed an opportunity to have him be, like, antsy or frustrated or weirded out on how long travel would be taking in
that
situation.
That would be great. Yeah.
What I'm honestly confused by is he has a passport somehow. How does
yeah.
he have a passport? It's a post 9/11 world. Baby needs passport.
That's
and
true.
You haven't been through jumper customs?
Yes.
Customs.
You just jumped.
Do you have anything to declare?
Yes. Do you have anything to jump?
And then the people hunting the jumpers are
yes, this is more
a religious
issue.
Organization
right. Paladins.
Called the Paladins.
Which is a historical thing.
Yes. But it's
is
also...
Is Paladin like a historical word
yeah.
for something?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's
yeah.
sort of like a really high order of religious knights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like there is...
All right, so there is a little shades of Templar in it.
Yeah.
Yes. I would even
gotcha.
Say I think they're probably an order of the Templars.
I don't want to say anything because I don't know a whole lot
or maybe
about
they're like
them.
Templars.
And I also don't want
don't
the Paladins on my tail.
Professors that listen
I know they're going to hunt us down if we say anything bad about
yes.
the Paladins.
Yeah, well, Knights Templar are still an organization. But...
Oh, it's okay, I'm a Mason.
Freemason.
But
control the universe.
It's confusing because we really only see like five of them for one
right.
thing. And one of them is Samuel L. Jackson, who
yes.
has the most insane hair.
Excellent silver hair.
Yes.
That at one point we think might have just gotten smudged onto his
face. Yeah,
it's, I think, I thought
tell me
too,
what it is.
It is a drywall. Because he's going through the
oh,
okay. But you have to understand how it looks like.
Yeah, no, it's totally
it looks like wig spray paint.
At first,
like,
yeah.
It's like the shit that you buy at Halloween when you're like, I need to be blonde for this. And you buy like that yellow
yes.
crap at a can. Like,
yes.
It looks like it was just sprayed on his face. And he was like, no, I did my one take. We're done.
Yes. No, I totally see it as that. I think because
he turns around and
it.
I was like, whoa.
But just the way it is, it, as you noticed, slightly paler. It's like dry walls from the thing. I've seen this enough times. But enough. Maybe like one hand's worth of times, which is probably more than necessary, but
I was also willing to give him the benefit of like, oh, maybe some of his weird like hairspray caught him in the face, like scars with. Okay, and it's unclear, we know that they're religious based on
right.
like two lines that Samuel L. Jackson
has.
That
was my major issue, is that there was no real introduction
it's
to them.
It's such a fucking throwaway too.
Yeah.
The whole religious aspect of it.
Yeah, they don't address it very much at all, but like kind of the intro to it is they've captured a jumper, they've got them wired up, and they use some. Is it like a ceremonial knife? Because it's got carvings on it. I'm like,
right.
do you
and
need
he, like,
to
he
stab them?
Like, wrapped up, so it looks
yeah.
like it's
stab
like
stab them first
thing.
Of all. Does
yeah.
it need to be with a special stabby thing, like
special
ceremonial?
Thing.
Or is
ceremonial
that?
Knife.
Or is that just your?
Or is
thing?
That just for yucks? Is that just your jollies?
For chuckles.
For chuckles. But so as we're introduced to Roland, it's him coming in and being like, only God should have this power. And
yeah.
there's no kind of indication as to why that would be important.
Yeah.
There's no, like we were discussing earlier, he doesn't need to be in full religious regalia, but there's no like,
he's just a guy.
Or yeah, it's just a guy in like,
it's like street clothes. It's like Sam Jackson came in set and he's like, I got my costume already.
Well, and that's
and
the same
like,
thing with all of his other people too. And we don't get a sense of it being a larger organization, A. B, we don't get the sense that they're, like, employed by, like, the Catholic Church or some,
but they,
like...
But,
church.
Like, they have this
yeah,
crazy technology,
church.
Too, right?
Right.
Like, who's funding this?
I don't know. Well, and also...
God?
Yeah.
Good work,
but
everyone.
It is just super, super, super weird to bring in this religious... A few religious moments and then
right.
to say, well, that's that part of the world. And it's like, there's a lot I need cleared up.
Yeah, it's a complete, like I said, it's a complete throwaway. And the thing that is, I guess, interesting, Meg, you read the first 10 pages of the book. I read the Wikipedia synopsis of the book and
mm-hmm.
all of its sequels. In the book,
wow.
Roland, who is called Brian Cox, like the actor.
Oh my goodness.
See,
I think that's why they changed
it.
That is,
I'm 100% sure that's why they changed it.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's just like, he's a government agent. He's not like a paladin with, like, religious fervor.
Wait, was a paladin a completely new thing they made up for this movie?
Yeah. He's just a government agent.
That's insane.
That was
my
question.
So much easier, right? Doesn't that make so much more sense for him to just be a government agent?
That is fucking insane. Why even open that door?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it can be, like, you know, a mysterious X-Files thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a secret, like, underground government agency. Like, I need to know about this shit.
You can even give shades to that character and have him be, like, literally, like, he's head of the X-Files. No one gives a shit about what he's doing. They don't believe in what he's doing. But, like, it's him and his, like, four-person team. They're gonna get out there and get those jumpers. Wow!
You just overly complicate it when you say, like, oh, he's
paladin.
A religious fanatic. Yeah.
Yeah, this is an abomination. Like,
yeah.
Clear word choice of that. And it's like, oh, well then, like, if you're going around calling people abominations, you clearly have, like, a deep-running religious fervor, and there's no other indication of that in any other... Like, we don't see it in it, like, because mostly we just see Roland going around when he's hunting jumpers, but there's no, like, he doesn't make any
references you don't see him,
to the
like,
Bible
pray?
With
yeah,
friends,
or, something.
Or there's nothing else other than, like, only God should have this power.
And there's,
like,
no, we don't get the sense of, like, oh, here's home base, and, like, here's our whole, like, tech and research team, and here's how we locate them and all that jazz.
And why is the tech not an abomination?
Yeah.
Only God have the power to make long-distance phone calls.
That would actually be great. He hangs up the phone. And remember, only God should have this power.
The other thing that I thought was really weird about this, I'm not trying to be pedantic here, but if...
Why
like,
not?
Yeah, sounds like you are.
If Samuel Jackson's... If Samuel Jackson and the Paladin's mission is to stop the jumpers who can be everywhere at once... Then go home. Like, they're not everywhere at once. They're only in one place at once. They can just be anywhere.
It's a weird, willful misreading.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah,
I feel like also
omnipresent.
Yeah, like, frankly, and also, like, let's assume that you do have some sort of religious bent. I feel like you could just get away with it being like, people probably shouldn't be able to teleport. This is against God. Like,
it's very,
if we were meant to teleport, we would all be able to teleport.
Right.
Therefore, you are an abomination. I must kill you. Like, the justification is what really confuses it even more.
Well, I was going to say, that's an even easier way to do this unnecessary religious bent to this movie.
Like, if you must be a religious fanatic, there's a simpler way to do it.
Yes! They're not omnipotent. They're none of that. And so then if they're saying, well... You shouldn't be able to teleport because that's only God's thing. Is God just teleporting everywhere and we don't know it?
Oh, you know he is.
That's a scene I would have loved.
Yeah.
That they have, like, Goddar at Paladin HQ to be like, he's in Cairo now.
Yeah. Damn it, this is Nora.
We're supposed to be tracking Santa.
We're tracking Santa the whole time.
Let me tell you about my morning. This morning I got coffee in Paris. Went surfing the Maldives. Took a nap on Mount
Kilimanjaro.
That would be a lot of fun. We kind of scratched the surface on this. We've dipped into this a little bit, but I want to get into the characters more fully.
Yes,
yeah.
As much as can be.
Well, I mean, we can make a blanket statement here. The characters, as written as we've seen, are really thin and shitty. Like,
yeah.
They're just not well-written.
I would say they're not very likable in any way. Like,
no.
So, Meg, you had found something online where Doug Liman was talking about how he didn't want it to be a traditional sort of superhero.
No,
oh, sorry, it was Chris. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, like, both are the same.
We sound the
yeah.
like.
Get out, spread
hair. Yeah. But there was a thing that Doug Liman had said about how he didn't want this to be a traditional superhero movie, and he wanted the main character to start off as, like, kind of as a jerk.
Right.
Which is, like, fine. Iron Man, I think, came out the same year as this, incidentally speaking, which did much better in terms of superhero who is a jerk and then learns to not be a jerk.
That arc is so much better done.
I digress. Anyway.
Yes.
His implication seemed to be is that he wanted the character to start out as a jerk and then learn to be a better person. He doesn't.
No.
He starts out as a jerk, and I guess he becomes, like, mildly less of a jerk and that he seems to kind of care about one person.
Well, that was also the thing that confused me is he was, towards the end of the movie, he's trying to stop Griffin from just blowing a bunch of people up, right?
He seems to be stopping them because he doesn't want him to blow Millie up.
Exactly.
Sure,
like,
but I guess...
It's not because he's like, I'm worried about the apartment. He says,
Millie is
what about
in the
Millie?
Mix of things that
I thought it was just like everyone, and I thought
he said, you can't kill all those other innocent people,
I get it.
That would have been fine, but he just says, oh, Millie.
Because I was going to say, like, that's even... I mean, even in my read of that, that's still weak, because then it's like, you're only the good guy because you didn't want to kill a bunch of people.
I mean, it's weak, but at least it would show something, right?
That's true. It would have shown a little bit of growth. Because he really is just, like, a douchebag. Not as a kid.
Yeah.
As a kid in the beginning, he's fine.
I was going to say that was kind of something that bothered me because he's as little David, who's not really little, who's like 14 or something, younger
five.
David, he's five. We don't get to see that part.
Yeah.
He's
too traumatic.
He's a tall 5-year-old.
But he is very sympathetic and is, you know, kind of, and I sort of got what, because having before read, rewind the back, before having heard what Chris had mentioned about reading about, with Doug Liman saying he wanted it to be a progression, I'm like, so is this understood that there was supposed to be one, but I'm like, but it's not, it's very, it's more of a 180.
See,
it's
that's
not,
what,
like, it doesn't match with the younger character. There's
that's,
right.
That's what led me
morality in.
In
the younger character that is not there in the older. Like, I can understand
yeah.
him becoming more confident
right.
now that he can jump, but he just, like, does not care.
Well, but that's what leads
anything.
Me into wondering, does jumping make you an asshole? Because he seems to be a sweet kid, then he jumps, and then we jump forward in the movie to when he is just a douchebag.
Well,
he's just stealing shitloads of money, like, living in some really tacky penthouse. He's, like, picking up chicks at a bar.
What I'm wondering is,
you know what I mean?
You see
yeah.
a lot of him, like, in his apartment in the beginning, you see him, like, jumping, like, 5 feet across the room. Like, he jumps to get the remote, he jumps to the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he also be tremendously fat?
yeah.
yeah.
Unless
yeah.
they're going to try to be like, jumping burns a lot of calories.
Something they probably
maybe it's like a hummingbird thing. He is,
right.
you know, like 800 times his body weight every day.
That would be amazing. To just see him like jump over to a flower and
just
like somehow like a proboscis comes out of his mouth. But yeah, David is not only kind of a douchebag, but he's also boring.
Yeah, he's very, like, the intro that we get is him bragging about his day, which is not really that cool. It sounds like he's trying very hard.
I had coffee in Paris.
Well, it sounds like he's trying, he's, like, trying to impress you, right? Like, I feel like if you met this guy
exactly.
in a bar, he'd be like, I just got back from Paris, and I got a really hot chick's digits today. Just
exactly.
like
a Polish chick in Rio.
Yeah, I would just be like, fuck this guy.
Well,
pretty much.
It also read as sort of, like, almost to me like an intro to a bad comic book, like a 90s aimed at teens comic book, where it's going to be like, he's the man, and we're going to tell you all about it.
Yeah. Well, and then I don't really appreciate things leading off with talking down to me, because he, like, that's his persona that he has. Like, he does that, like, braggy thing, which you could almost kind of write off as, like, oh, well, he didn't quite manage to, like, be impressive. He's just talking about it. But, like, then when he goes back to talk about the first time that he jumped, he's like, I used to be a chump, just like you. And I was like, why is that?
You don't
like,
know me.
Exactly.
You don't know my story.
Chumps can't jump.
Chumps can't jump.
That'd actually be a really good tagline.
That is really good. Chumps can't jump.
It's actually the movie about everyone except for David.
I'm like, this is your, I'm like, supposed to be caring about you, and you're just
right.
kind of, like, half-assedly berating me, and,
well, and like,
trying to be cool, and
like Brendan
I'm
said,
not drawing me in at all.
Like Brendan said, if a guy comes up to you and says that shit, you're like, shut the fuck
get
up.
Away.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like, you're trying to prove this shit, too.
Yeah.
There's a scene also where we first meet David when he's jumping, like, incremental distances around his apartment, where he's watching TV,
yes,
and on the TV
this.
It's like, there are bad floods, and families are stranded on their rooftops, and they're probably gonna die, and
yes,
then he,
is.
Like, leaves, and
yes.
you think, like, oh, he's gonna go save them, and it's like, no, he jumped to London
well, no.
to, like,
so
sleep with a rando.
They make a point to say, like, it would take a miracle to reach these people,
yeah.
and he just kind of shakes his head and turns the TV off, and it's
which,
like, well, I could use my powers for good, but why
yeah.
should I?
That's such,
like, wow.
That was such a tough moment, because I actually don't know that you can bring the character back from that moment. He was given an opportunity for an act of heroism that would have been very easy
right.
for him.
So the hacky thing is in screenwriting, you have the pet the dog moment, right? Where, like, even when the guy's a jerk, he's like, oh, he pets the puppy and
right.
we like him again. Where what is David's pet the dog moment? I don't know if he has one.
Millie?
I think they're trying to have Millie be that.
But, like, that happens so late in the movie, too.
Also, you don't care, because who cares? Like, Millie is
yeah.
nothing. You're nothing, Rachel Bilson.
I enjoy young Millie. I thought she was great.
Young
yeah,
Millie
was fine.
Rob.
Yeah.
The young cast was actually, I thought, better.
I was like, can we follow that?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm interested.
So,
stick with them.
Just to jump to the intro for a second
yeah.
here. So the intro is interesting to me in that it has younger actors playing characters of, like, age 15, 16, something like
yeah.
that. And then you jump forward in time. You're not jumping forward that much,
like,
right?
8 years?
Yeah,
eight
maybe.
Years,
okay,
said.
Yeah. For one, it says something about, like, the state of where young people movies were in 2008 that you wouldn't want it to be, like, a young adult thing where
right.
you're following around, like, these high school babies learning, like, how to jump.
Oh my god, though, can you imagine if that movie was made today? It would be, like, the Fulmer stars
right.
all over the place.
Yeah, no,
but about jumping.
The
jump in our stars.
Yes, Mars Baby learns to jump.
Yeah.
the whole skipping ahead in time, I think, is very detrimental to the movie because you start off with these actors and it's like, oh no, it's these actors. The baby actors go through their own little journey where he tries to be nice to Millie. You think he's dead. She's very sad, and then she sees the snow globe that he left there for her. It's detrimental because, then you have to be like, okay, now they're different actors, and now he's a dick.
Right.
Yeah.
You see so much of him as a young character, and then to just, completely swap actors off is, it's unsettling to me, almost.
It's unsettling, and it also brings up a problem of when she finds that snow globe returned to her sitting on, the swing outside of her house... Is that the moment when she realizes that he's not dead, even though everything she has seen that day would have shown her?
Yeah, there's confusion there.
So you have to assume that everyone in his small town believes this kid is dead.
Or at least what's going into the papers that day is, saw kid go into river, emergency services turned up and could not recover body.
Then later, whenever David sees Millie's mom, she says, you're not dead. As if she was under the impression for the past 8 years that he was indeed dead. But Millie, presumably, since he left the snow globe, she found the snow globe outside where it ought not have been. Ergo, someone left it there.
Swing.
Yeah. So presumably it was David. You imagine that she's going through the next 8 years being but he has to be alive. How else did the snow globe get here? And everyone else is being no, he's dead. Stop being a crazy person.
But then when he shows up at her bar, she is so blasé.
No.
You're going to stand there for 45 minutes and stare at me and not say hi?
Yeah, her mom has a bigger reaction than she does.
And you don't even see the entirety of her mom's face.
Yeah, and then there's also the thing where they're sitting at the bar and she's like, why don't we make small talk? And I'm just like, why are you fucking asked? Where have you been for the last 8 years, douchebag?
Let's talk about Millie.
All right.
What would you like to talk about?
Just the void of a character.
I will tell you that I did appreciate that she's not a super complex character, but I felt like she resisted more than female protagonists are usually given the freedom to do when this doesn't make sense, and I'm going to call you on this. And then she still kind of goes along with because plot, how are we going to move you? But I appreciated that there was some more pushback from her about, where he says something there is no limits. And I'm like, ooh, ding, 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 ding. Big kind of signal, and Millie has this look on her face that is what does that mean?
The limit does not exist.
The limit does not exist.
I see what you're saying, and I do appreciate that. Would you say they have chemistry?
No, I wouldn't.
No.
Which is weird, considering they've been together for years.
It seemed very, building off... It seemed very building off of, the kind of cuteness they had as kids. I had a note that was just now that we're of age and both hot, let's do it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just there's no chemistry there. It's totally based off of I saw them have history a few scenes ago, and now that it's not
happy
that
they
do
carry
it,
this through.
They can do it. So cool, I guess.
So there's two things
about
Millie I wanted to throw out there.
Okay.
Thing number one, in the beginning, so the most we get about Millie is that she wants to travel places. That's what we get from her as a child. When she opens her locker, she just has pictures and a list of places. Later on, David, baby David, gives her a snow globe with the Eiffel Tower inside. Why don't they go to Paris?
Which is cute. Yeah, right? That's what I think.
Well, Harry got coffee there. He doesn't want to go
I guess
back.
So, right?
My goodness.
Yeah. Which, why did the snow globe not have the Colosseum in it?
That's such a good question.
Is the easiest fucking connection you can make.
Yeah.
It's also,
boop.
It's very obvious payoff.
She says Rome is at the top of my list.
Yeah,
so
that's the thing. Your list of 8 cities that you seem to, just be, wherever
Italy.
In Europe is fine by me.
It also barely counts as characterization for her, though, because that's really just the impetus to move them to another location.
But, that's all you get from her.
Yeah.
And the follow-up to that is when you see Millie then as an adult, they point out she's working at a bar, she hasn't left the town, this is her life. Her life feels sad. I feel as a viewer, you're supposed to be oh, this is sad. So he represents freedom to her in the sense that she meets this guy and he's let's go to Europe. And she's I've always wanted to go to Europe. And she's dependent upon him to not be such a sad character because she needs him to get her out of this town. What if he runs into her in New York City? What if she's just there and she's
right.
I became a successful businesswoman.
I had my own life.
Yeah, I was, I just got back from Europe actually and now I'm in New York.
I love Rome. I have a villa there.
Yeah, exactly. But she's such a sad character.
She is, though, but she is in those circumstances when you pay attention to them. As played in the movie, Rachel Bilson does not telegraph very much sadness.
No, and I'm sure, I don't think the screenwriters wanted you to focus on how sad this feels to, like, think about this character. Mm. It's sort of like, if you had all stopped to think about Millie as a character, you'd be like, wow, her life's gotta be pretty depressing. Like,
yeah.
She's not doing anything she wanted to do. She hasn't left her town. That, like, her jerky, drunken ex-boyfriend probably shows up to work every day and sexually harasses her.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't think the movie, like, took into consideration how depressing that honestly is. Watching this, all I could think of was just, like, my God, like, she's just, like, trading in one miserable life for, like, a wildly different miserable life.
She leaves, like, in the middle of her shift to go to Rome. Like,
yeah,
this guy,
right?
This guy that she hasn't seen in 8 years, not confirmed dead or not, shows up out of the blue and is
with,
like,
sketchy explanations about where,
yes,
his money comes from.
Let's go to Rome. Let's go right now. And she's like, yes, I'm on board. Where is the plane at? And
I don't need a
job. Like, she just came.
No, and I'm thinking, like, I'm just saying, like, what if I was at work and then some, like, rando I knew 8 years ago kind of was like, hey, I'm going to Rome. Want to come with me? I'd be like, can you give me, like, 2 weeks to work out the vacation
days? No, she just, like, she comes back from break and is just,
yeah,
like, hey, Fiona, so I'm going to Rome now. See,
yeah,
you later.
She's like, okay, bye, hon.
Okay, bye. Get me something nice.
Yeah.
It's great. And once it's in Rome that we get a more proper introduction to Jamie Bell's character,
yes,
Griffin. He's really sort of, I think, what the writers thought they were doing with David.
Yes.
Is,
yeah.
What that showed me is it's an acting problem, not necessarily a writing problem.
Yeah.
Well,
well,
no,
I think it's both.
No, there's a, because, okay, so here's the thing that I don't understand with David, or with Griffin, sorry. It doesn't come across that Griffin likes David very much, which, understandable, but
yeah,
you expect it to sort of be like, maybe Griffin is, you know, like, again, all roads lead to Star Wars. Griffin is the Han Solo, David is the Luke, right? So, like,
mm-hmm,
you have this guy who's, like, kind of jaded and, like, in it for himself, maybe a little bit more, and then he, like, learns to get along with other people, and, like, that's his arc.
Right.
Griffin has no arc. Griffin's arc is to continually be angry and, like, fight with David. At the end of the movie, they leave Griffin, just like last scene, in Chechnya, tied to some power
lines.
In a
telephone.
Yeah, some telephone
power
wires.
Lines, thank you.
Yeah. And that's where we leave him. I remember seeing the finale expecting Griffin to, like, show up at some point and help dispatch Roland.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
Nope.
This is what happens to Griffin as a character. Griffin as a character has nothing to do, and he is just dispatched in Chechnya.
Well, which is really, I think, a credit to Jamie Bell's talents, that he pulls a very compelling and watchable character out of Griffin.
He does.
To the point where the original author who wrote Jumper was like, I really like this character and would like to explore more, and wrote a not a sequel, but a companion book,
yeah,
to Jumper that's all just Griffin's story,
yeah,
which is actually good.
Sorry, you're absolutely right. You do expect Griffin to be the Han Solo and David to be the Luke, and I think they tried to play that about halfway through, because I think that around the time that David is like, let's do, like, Marvel team-up.
Yeah.
And that's sort of
Marvel
dorky,
team-up.
And it's also a little bit more, like, pure-hearted of, like, let's be friends, let's work together. And Griffin is the one like, no, fuck you. So I think they were like, they suddenly, like, stumbled into this dynamic and then had to do, like, a really harsh 180 on David's character. But it wasn't successful.
But, like literally within the context of a scene, Griffin will go from being, like, okay with David to being like, I'll cut your eyes out if you don't leave me. Like,
right.
It's just,
that's
like,
true.
It's like, it's,
stay away from my wall!
Again, like, it works because Jamie Bell is charismatic, but, like, this is a manic fucking character.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
I
true.
Feel like you're supposed to, like, want to like this character as, like, a fun rogue, but he comes off as, like, mentally unstable.
What do you think about your baby?
My precious.
About your little thumb scrubber.
My little thumb scrubber. That's a weird movie. Yeah, no, I this is, you know, the first time I saw it again was in 2008, so it was, like, 19. but still, like, you know, I thought it was, those are all the points that you've made there. He does kind
Thank
of,
you.
Like, you're welcome.
Thank you.
He does kind of swing back and forth, and I think that's, again, kind of more of a writing issue. Because, yeah, it seemed very much like, I was like, Griffin needs to give David lessons on how to be cocky in an interesting way, or,
mm-hmm,
like, a way that I actually want to pay attention to.
A charming way.
In
even.
A charming way. So, I mean, compared with the other characters in this movie, he is quite the breath of fresh air. So
yeah.
I didn't mind. Like, he is interesting, and he does challenge Dave a lot and, like, gets to quip at him and also provide, like, little shreds of exposition that were, like that's how we know how far the paladins are supposed
right,
to be.
Yeah.
He says, from medieval times, and I'm like, what, medieval times? Like,
restaurants?
Well, he dropped a lot of exposition that I felt like should have come a lot sooner.
Absolutely.
And I even said to Brendan at one point, I think he eventually agreed with me, was they needed to meet up a lot sooner.
Yes, and so I really liked, it was clear that he was supposed to be sort of a reluctant teacher, mentor thing.
But that arc has to be so truncated because he comes in the middle of like act two of the movie.
Yeah, he comes in the middle and is like, doesn't want to deal with David at all, and then it just kind of like goes back and forth between like, yeah, I'll deal with you for these 5 minutes, but then I'd still hate you.
But if you pull that, I think even into like the end of the first act or something, I think you can, because I actually thought Hayden Christensen was a lot more fun to watch when he was bouncing off it.
I agree with you.
Yes.
As scene partners, I thought they were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Hayden is at his loosest when he's with Jamie Bell.
Yeah.
Which, again, he has better chemistry with Jamie Bell than he is with Rachel Bilson.
Yeah. If we retool it around them as the couple, I would love it. Can we, like, talk very briefly about Samuel L. Jackson as Roland?
I got nothing to say about Samuel L. Jackson, honestly.
He's just pretty much, he's in the movie doing
like,
his
He's doing his regular competent job.
Just Sam Jackson around.
Yeah. I got nothing.
Cut the check, Anthony Mackie.
Yeah.
Did anyone else think it was weird that Diane Lane is in this movie for a grand total of 30 seconds?
I mean, it's a little weird that she's in this, but I just figure, like, Diane Lane's got to eat. We all got to eat.
Well, but it's... I really reached a point where I was like, why at all? Because
so,
she's not that much established that when she turns out to be a paladin, you're like...
Mm-hmm. Continental Principality of America. I imagine that a lot of this is... problem with this movie is, like, laying the grounds for sequels that never happen.
Yeah.
But it feels like this movie is really just setting her up to be like, okay, she's going to come back in a big way in the second
one. Right.
I was wondering this when I first saw the movie, and I was wondering if you guys thought this too, and maybe this is an obvious point. But when you first see her, like, physically in the movie, when David's been arrested and he's in Italy,
uh-huh.
and she shows up and she's like, you have 30 seconds to get out of here before they come here, and then she leaves. Do you think you're supposed to think that she might be a jumper?
I didn't even think of it.
I thought of it the first time I saw it, is that
cool.
Maybe, right, is that maybe you, and again, but the movie doesn't fall through on this, so I don't know if the movie wants me to think this, but I think maybe you're supposed to think that she is a jumper, so then when, like, you see at the end that she's a paladin, it's more of a thing. I don't know if that's true, but I think it would be interesting.
I think that would be very interesting, and I would have liked that, but I also think this is the kind of movie that would have had someone, like, face the camera and say, I guess she's a jumper.
Again, this would also be something that they could work through if Millie found out sooner that David was a jumper, because if he jumped her to Rome, like, I think ideally she should find out much sooner about his powers.
Right.
If he jumped her to Rome, then he could be like, you'll never fucking guess what happened. My
right.
mom just showed up. She told me to go, and then she just, like, she's gone. Like, maybe she's like me.
Right.
And so, like, he thinks this entire time, like, maybe she left because, like, she has this ability also, and she had to get away. And then you find out she's a paladin. Which also, and again, I'm sorry, and I'll stop. She says at the end, I'm a paladin. I had two choices. One, kill you, or two, leave. Or, third choice, not be a paladin. Like, stay with your fucking kid. Be like, oh, I guess, like, being a jumper doesn't mean you're, like, an affront to God. Like, it's just something that happens. Like, maybe I can help my kid out. She's like, no, I made the right choice, which was to never talk to you.
Which was, like,
B-flat.
Really, it was a hard pill to swallow, because you're just sort of like, I feel like the movie wanted you to believe that, yes,
right. Like, yeah,
she made the hard, correct choice.
You
want to
think that was a hard choice, mom, but good for you.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no.
Well, like, I understand how it is a tough choice,
it
but
is.
I think there's a clear right one. Like,
and if you're going to go with that, that could not be a choice for whatever reason, like, explain why that is. Like, does the religious order that we've sort of built up have something on her that they won't let her go?
That doesn't exist in the movie, so we
don't
know.
That's what I mean.
Like,
if you're going to do that, you need to
you need a reason.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Diane Lane is not a jumper, then are we to believe she was just in Rome on paladin business?
Well, because, again, as I said, later when they're talking, Sam Jackson's talking on the phone to someone, and he says, why didn't you send a bunch of paladins?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy on the phone says, she only said to send two. And so I assume that she is still, like, a practicing paladin, and she, like, for whatever reason, found out that it was David who was in Rome, and so she and, like, some other rando went to Rome, and she got there first and was like, get out of here.
I see. Okay.
That's my assumption.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dad?
Yeah.
Michael Rooker. He's good.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was him, like, when it was Michael Rooker until, like,
yeah.
Nankin, but I was like, I just saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2 song.
Oh, you're all about, like, conflicted dad figures.
All of that,
yeah.
Yes.
They didn't give him much to do, but with the little material he had, he really sunk his teeth into it.
I think, so, like, the thing, Meg, you were saying is that in the book, his dad's abusive. Like,
it's
his dad's
very different.
Abusive.
But full stop, very clearly abusive.
Yeah
that
no
was
ambiguity.
That was kind of my thing, was very different portrayals between the book and the movie, because in the book, the opening scene is him describing the first time that he jumps, and this is triggered by the fact that his dad is going to beat him, and he's going into detail about he's getting the buckle out, and it's clearly established that this is a recurring thing. So he's very obviously abusive. And then in the movie, the line is like, well, as for my dad, he wasn't much of one.
Yeah.
But we don't really get deep into that. Like, because when he says that as he's walking into the house, and the dad's like, where have you been?
Yeah.
Because it's nighttime.
Right.
He comes
He's
in,
walking soaking wet.
He's soaking wet. He says, you need to get a mop. Like, I'm like, maybe he's strict? These are, like,
yeah.
pretty reasonable
yeah.
things to be mad at him. I'm asking you a question. I want an answer back.
Yeah. He
but
seems like a little bit of a
stressed.
Deadbeat dad.
I was going to say, like, what is his biggest sin, that he's unemployed?
And I don't know if he isn't, because he seems to keep leaving the house, like in the
That's
morning.
He's just, like, he's not, but there's nothing that says he is a total deadbeat and useless, and then we did the very lazy telegraph of, he's got a beer, so he must
yeah.
be an alcoholic.
He just
and I'm like,
seems...
but no, some people have, like, three beers
yeah.
a night, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
He also just never seems that antagonistic.
He seems, and then that was my other thing, is he seemed to be, like, on David's side, because he's very...
He protects him when
He does, when Roland
up.
Is there,
yeah.
he says,
yeah.
you know, I'll let you know if something pops up, and Roland's like, no, you won't. He's like, no, I won't.
Yeah.
He's like, get out.
And also, there's the scene wherever, like, when David accidentally jumped, where David, like, escapes
jumps
and jumps
back
into
his
room.
To grab some
yeah.
money, right?
Well, he had the money with him.
That's
like,
what
he just inadvertently jumps to his room, like, as an escape. And his dad's like... I'm sorry, you can come home.
Like,
David,
come
home.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
like,
felt bad.
Like, I think I'm going
yeah.
crazy. Like, are you there, David? And it's like, you do feel bad for him. Like, his dad doesn't seem like that bad of a person in the movie.
Well,
yeah.
And honestly, that was the scene that just cemented for me. I'm like, so what part of him was not a good dad to you? Because
yeah.
he seems to be trying to reach out. He
yeah.
seems...
Again, it also makes David seem like more of a jerk.
Yeah.
Which
so, like,
he never stops.
Yeah.
Not a great dad, but nothing overtly like, he is an abusive dad.
Yeah.
He is,
right.
you know,
yeah.
deadbeat in the way that, like, he doesn't
no, he's
care
not like,
about
like,
David.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Yeah, he's not, like passed out on the couch
about.
The entire time.
But also, like,
yeah.
you know, it's a waste of Michael Rooker.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a great actor, and
yeah.
he was better
very charming,
than,
very talented.
Than
Despite
it's a nothing part.
Deciding to let the IRS into his house based on, like,
yeah.
show me a badge, I'll let you in, I guess. If you have questions about my kids.
Speaking of nothing parts, we're going to do this real quick, but Kristen Stewart.
What up, K-Stew?
Yeah.
What is she doing in this movie?
Making a carpet.
Chris, yeah, she plays David's half-sister.
I didn't
at the
realize
end.
She had a name until you read that out of the Wikipedia page.
I mean, it probably just
like,
says
oh,
in the end credits, I'm sure. Or maybe the mom says it to her before.
She
maybe the mom
she calls
says
her honey.
She
says
honey.
Oh, does she? Then
yeah.
I got nothing.
Go upstairs.
Yeah, she's just there. She answers the door. Hi, can I help you?
But I mean, K-Stew wasn't really a thing at that point, right?
No, but then why are you hiring any... Like, what was the point of having
I mean,
anyone?
She probably wasn't, like, a very big actor. So, like, it probably just
That's
was,
true. We
like,
were talking about, in terms of timeline, of when Twilight started,
yeah.
when Twilight Prairie came out in the fall of the state.
Yeah.
I feel like this is sort of like a summer blockbuster,
right.
blockbuster
yeah.
quote-unquote.
Quote-unquote. Well, it actually made money.
And then Twilight came out. Yeah, that's true.
It was number one in, I think, it's release week.
Might have been. One's
wow.
problem.
Yeah.
Well, now it's supposed to be late.
Yeah, right? It was a slow summer.
Sorry, guys.
But yeah, she probably just wasn't, like, a very notable actor at that
That's
point.
Probably true, but it is jarring to see that now, you know, lover or hater, she is of a level now that would be very strange to just see.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, do you have the reaction anytime you see an actor's, like, first role?
No, I suppose
okay.
that.
Because, yeah, when it came out, she probably filmed it, like, what? She could have filmed it in, like, 1 or 2 years before
yeah.
it actually came out, so
mm-hmm.
she might not even have...
Yeah, and I mean, again, also, and this is just me presupposing, but maybe, again, like Diane Lane herself, this was sequel bait, where, like,
right.
oh, she's going to have a role to play in the next one.
Right,
so
well, that's true.
It could be either of those two things. Right? I think it's more likely that she was just not much of a name, and they just hired someone who happened to be Kristen Stewart.
That would make
yeah.
sense. Also, if we want to just get this one out of the way, action sequences in this movie, I thought they were pretty bad.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of good ideas for the action sequences. I think there are
yes.
some... The one that works really well for me is when the Paladins are attacking Griffin's lair. Griffin shows up at one point, like, with a double-decker bus that he jumps
yeah.
on and, like, crashes it into Sam Jackson.
It's fun!
Yeah, it is fun. And I think that sequence is pretty well done. There are a lot of times where I find it impossible to tell what's going on.
I was just going to say that. It's
yeah.
so hard to track so many of the action scenes. They're so poorly shot. They're so chopped up. And I know... Maybe it was around that time we started getting into that. Like, I know Bourne kind of was doing
well,
the same
thing.
Well,
he did Bourne Identity, too.
Oh, he, that's
Which
right.
Which is, like, he did that, like, he's done, he did Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
It's like his testing
like,
ground.
Like,
right.
he's done good action movies. I don't know why this one is so incomprehensible.
And But it's weird to me that, like, your eyes glaze over and you're like, well, I guess there was chaos and then the scene ended.
Yeah, it's hard to follow, like, when they're jumping, sometimes it's hard to follow where they're going to. It's hard to follow, like, who's going, like, where in the screen at various points. You look at something like Nightcrawler attacking the president in X-Men 2,
mm-hmm.
which is a really fantastic sequence.
It's
like,
so good.
Yeah, it's a great action sequence that incorporates his abilities as a teleporter. For all the action sequences in this movie that involve jumping, there's, like, maybe two that work well. I like this, I like that one, and I like the one where Griffin's driving the car through Tokyo.
Yes.
Like, at one point, like, he jumps and it's, like, flying through the air, and it, like, jumps back down to the ground.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fun sequence.
Yeah.
And actually, Griffin, I think, brought and then took with him the fun.
Pretty
yeah.
true.
But yeah, just for an action movie, it was blah.
Yeah, it's surprisingly ineptly handled.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we wanted to get into?
Anything else you wanted to compliment the movie about?
Compliment.
Like, is there anything? Because I feel like we trash a lot, so I feel
Jamie Bell was the shining star for me in this movie. I think he took what he had and really ran with it.
I mean, and there are good actors. Like, again, Diane Lane.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Michael Rooker.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the actors take these, like, two-dimensional shitty characters and make them stand out because they're good.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, contrary-wise, Rachel Bilson and Hayden Christensen are just, like, not that good of actors to make these characters likable. You can see reading the screenplay that, like, none of these characters on paper are great. Sometimes they just turn out, you know, sometimes you get lucky because you hire a good actor.
Right.
That's it. It's not a bad concept as movies go.
It's
like,
a really cool concept.
Yeah.
I think it was also cool that they shot on location in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of the locations were nice. When I was reading about
in
the Colosseum,
yeah.
They were only allowed to do it during certain hours of the day. No equipment could actually touch the ground, and they could only use natural lighting. So with that in mind, like that.
That's why it looked
nice.
Different.
Yeah.
Which is neat, too. It's a nice creative challenge, I think, to give someone also.
I
mean,
also
obviously, actual reasons why you can't do it.
Right.
But, you know, it ends up being a fun creative
with
challenge.
With that in mind, I'm looking at it as, like, that was an interestingly lit
It's pretty
sequence.
Impressive in
yeah.
a weird way. Like, looking back on it, I'm kind of impressed to hear that that's a
yeah.
thing. You
yeah.
know? And again, like I said, a lot of the action sequences have neat ideas to them, even if they are not well
they're
executed.
Just, yeah, they're
right.
just poorly
yeah.
executed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think music was notable.
No, I could not tell you anything from the score, so looking to score is a no-go.
Well, then let's get to fixes. Who wants to start?
Okay, so the first thing I just have written down here is that Rice must be likable.
Yes.
Also, sidebar.
Rice Bowl.
It bugs me. Yeah, it bugs me that his nickname is Rice Bowl when
good.
Rice Cake is right there.
It's
he
crazy.
Even says it at one point, Rice Cake.
Yeah,
or like Rice Krispies. Like, there are so many easier nicknames than Rice Bowl. Like, who fucking says Rice
That's
Bowl?
That's what I said. The hell kind of bully nickname is this, but
yeah.
also fuck that kid and his dick.
Yeah, what a dumb bully, right? You expect better from
That's
your bullies.
That's shitty. Why are you throwing the snowball in the middle of a frozen river? That's just, that's
yeah.
too far.
No, he's a dumb bully.
Yeah.
What a dumb dumb. Okay. So the other.
Right.
As Chris had
yeah.
said, and I agree, Griffin should show up sooner. I think that the way to work Griffin in earlier is that in this movie, you see him pop up a few times. Like, it seems like he just almost happens to be there in London whenever David jumps to London. They just happen to be at the same bar, and, like, Griffin is taken aback by this guy jumping. I think that, one, he should be aware of him, and two, you should see this, like, shady-looking, like, guy, like, every now and then following David, and you think, oh,
yeah.
maybe he's a bad guy. Like, maybe this is, like, the villain we're looking out for. Contrary-wise, Roland isn't a paladin. He's a government agent with nefarious purposes, but he seems to be a good guy at first. Because also, in this movie, when you first meet Roland, I think, in David's apartment, he kind of comes off as, like, kind of okay before you realize that he used a door to keep David from leaving. Where he just says something like, he's like, I just want to know, like, how you got into a bank. I'm not the police. You're not under arrest. And you could kind of almost play this as, like, I just want to know more about your stuff. And so maybe you think, like, when you first meet him, like, oh, he's the good guy. And actually Griffin is,
yeah.
like, a shadowy, like, evil character. And then you find out, of course, that this is not the case.
That'd be fun to play with.
Millie is going to find out about his powers earlier on. Like I said, it's so much trouble trying to explain this to her, like, at the fucking, like, tail end of this movie. I also want her, like I said, to meet him in New York City. He doesn't go back home after he gets found out in New York City. Like, he can still teleport away even if he thinks that Roland is a good guy, because he's just like, I don't want to fucking deal with this shit, and just leaves. But Millie is going to be in New York City at the time, because it just makes David seem like an incredible, like, idiot to go back to his hometown, involve more people, and then, like, leave again. They can still go to Rome. Roland and Griffin sort of, like, meet David and Millie head on in Rome, and that's when they find out, like, oh, actually, Griffin is a jumper and he's good, and Roland is actually a secret shady government agency. The last action sequence doesn't have Millie get kidnapped, but it's going to be, like, a big, crazy action sequence. Griffin leaves about halfway through, and then later he returns with a bunch of other jumpers. Because,
oh.
like, we find out that, like, there are more jumpers, and, like, they all help with a battle sequence at the end. In an attempt to track down David Millian Griffin, like, through a jump scare, Roland follows through, but then splits himself in half whenever David, like, destroys the machine. He gone.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
We also figure out, as I said previously, we were led to believe that Mom is a jumper. David finds out in Griffin's lair that that she is, in fact, a paladin, or at least Griffin believes her to be. She reveals to him whenever David meets her that she left the Order and she wants nothing to do with them anymore. She found out, like, who he was because she still has some contacts within them, and that's how she ended up in Rome to help him escape. David convinces her to help them, and that's where the movie ends, with the next movie being the implication that, like, his mother is going to escape system and not be, you know, chasing them down.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
Good job. Okay, so in my fix, I'm going to shift the focus quite a bit. I think...
How about Millie?
It's just about a working girl. No, actually, it's going to be a lot more about the mom. My thought is, I think it would be a really interesting take to have a lot of this from the mom's perspective. I think she's involved with the government agency that either inadvertently or in experimentation created the jumpers, and that she herself has sort of splintered off to create them, and that's how David came to be. And that maybe she even just, like, created the child on her own, like, but
through a virgins in the force.
Right, exactly. No, through her belief in God.
Oh.
No,
Well, Chris, though, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
I have.
Oh. Was it something the Jedi told you? Yeah.
No, but my thought is that she splinters off and was just... My thought is she creates David and then decides, I can't do this anymore, and then splinters off to raise him on her own. Maybe when he is starting to attract attention, distances him from her to try to save him, as a thing of, like, she gave herself back to them as, like, a... Not like a diversion, but a sort of, like, maybe they'll stop looking if they have me instead.
Sacrifice.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, but she's still, maybe she goes back and is, like, forced to work with them. Yeah. So then David is just sort of using, I think this is kind of how you get into this idea of him breaking into banks and having it be maybe a little bit more understandable. Because in this case, he's living on the streets eventually.
Right.
He has to make his own do, so he uses it to steal. It kind of puts him down this bad path. Eventually, like, you know, the government agency that's not the Paladins comes looking for him. I would almost want it to be sort of like a weird Oliver Twist thing, where the other jumpers are also kind of, like, cast out and trying to make their own way in life. So then the Griffin would be the sort of, who's
Fagin?
The... Fagin. Griffin would be sort of a Fagin who is leading them down towards a more violent and vengeful path.
Ooh.
And maybe David falls in with that for a little bit, but maybe he realizes, oh, they go too far and, like, kill an agent out of hand or something like that. So that I think his real mission of the movie is that he leaves that behind to go kind of break his mom out of government prison and go out and try to live their lives.
Wow.
So,
that's
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so to swing it to a completely other character, I'm going to kind of stick with moving. I would be a big fan of being a Jerry Bell fan, having the movie be about Griffin and having him kind of meet David along the way, because having read Griffin's book, that was actually, like, interesting. That was a good way to, like, establish this is how I'm a jumper, this is kind of a day-to-day life. So maybe we meet him, and he's established this is why I'm a loner, because it sort of felt like they tried to do that with David.
Mm-hmm.
And why, ish, like, they tried, like, I think that's why it came off as reading douchey when he was trying to be like, well, I had to, like, do banks and be on my own, and I'm trying to be a loner, but it didn't come off as well as when Griffin tries to be a loner. So I'd rather just have Griffin be the main character, and then as he is in the middle of doing something, comes across David, who's completely, you know, naive, and ends up kind of saddled with him, and sort of has to teach him how to be a jumper, kind of doing that mentor relationship, or just do a better job with David. But I'm a big fan of Griffin. I think he's a fun character. I think he's got a lot of life to him, so I think it'd be interesting to just start with him and then have David come in and sort of use that as a way to fill in, like, Griffin's probably already filling in the audience about things, but to kind of plug some more holes, you've got David in there.
Hypothetically speaking, I'm curious.
Yeah.
Would it still follow more or less the same plot of the movie, except, like, you would kind of start with Griffin, and then, like, this, like, idiot would wander in and be like, Oh, my girlfriend.
Well, it wouldn't be that so much as, like, I don't have, like,
a... Yeah, no, I'm not
like,
saying, yeah, no, you don't need, like, a three-act structure, I'm just curious.
Or just it wouldn't be that, but it would be sort of Griffin is on a mission to do something, hunting the paladins or whatever, and somehow in the middle of like a fight he trips over David, or like somehow David comes into it and gets pulled into the fold of like, we have to, you know, I'll show you how to do this so you're not a total dumb dummy, you know, get, you know, killed off by the paladins. And then, because interestingly enough, when they first meet, he says, welcome to the war.
Yeah.
And then there's no address of it later. And so I'm like, is it really a war?
Well, that's
or
like,
are you just...
like, it's like a one-man war.
Also, yeah, because there's also
waiting.
A weird thing where whenever... I think it's like the second time David pops into Griffin's lair, he says something about, like, he, like, points to the paladin, he's like, oh, like, where's the paladin? He's like, oh, here he is. And he's like, what about the others? And I assumed he meant, like, other jumpers. Because, like,
mm-hmm.
you think, like, an obvious question at some point David should ask Griffin is, like, are there other people like us? Like, I thought
yeah.
I was the only one like us until, like, this doofus with silver spray can hair, like, showed up in my apartment. Like,
Griffin even says at one point, you're not the only one, which seems to indicate he would have met other jumpers.
Right. Well,
because you think he was the only one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, I don't play well with others. So you assume he has come across them at some point, and maybe they tried to team up in the past, and that didn't work out. Maybe we can do that.
It's just strange to me that the movie never really addresses the other jumpers, aside from that one rando that Roland kills in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I would just like to establish more of the jumper versus paladin, why it is this way.
Would they still be paladins in your...
They
would
have to be called paladins.
Okay. I mean, are they still religious zealots?
They don't have to be religious.
Okay, I'm just curious.
That could be interesting, but if we're going to go that way, like, again, we would develop that a lot further.
Right.
Like, why, what is the actual, you know, they are antagonizing the jumpers for whatever reason, and we get more clarification on why they're against each other, and he and David have to work together. And maybe they can meet other jumpers along the way, and... they do that, and then basically just stop trying to make franchises out of everything. like, this could have been, like, a good... It's pretty much a one-off thing, because it's a cool concept that you can basically do, I think, the most justice in one movie rather than dragging it out through, you know, four, I guess, is the magic number of things that we don't really need to do. Especially where, in the books, it seems to be Jumper is... It just encapsulates David's story, and then the sequels are... other things happening.
Right.
So if we're going to do kind of a introduction to Jumper sort of thing, just keep it all in one movie and then let the fandom go wild or whatever. Like, I think it's more fun when it's just like a single movie that everybody can kind of like make theories on or get further from, and then like less is more and leave them wanting more and that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
But it seems like in this case they're like, don't worry about the details, we're going to clear that up in the sequel.
Because we're
going to
talk about it later.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no, just give me all the details now, and we can kind of
make,
play with that in this movie on its own.
Make
and
a good movie first.
One.
Then I actually want to turn to you first for this next question.
Okay.
Would you recommend this movie?
It's worth at least one watch through. If you enjoy Hayden Christensen, watch it.
All two of you. Mother Christensen.
Mother Christensen.
And Father Christensen.
Show it to Briar Rose. If you like Jamie Bell, this is a character that Jamie Bell did that still kind of sticks with me.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. So if you have any kind of investment in him, I would watch it.
It's kind of a flat no for me.
I'm not offended.
I know. I was looking at you with like so like conciliatorily, but I did not enjoy this movie. I think Hayden Christensen cannot lead a movie very well. I think it's so distracting how much better suited Jamie Bell would have been.
Yeah.
I think Rachel Bilson is really boring in this. I just think this movie is boring and it's difficult to pay attention to.
No, I wouldn't.
I just kind of have a sympathy for movies sort of have a potential.
That's right, and I'm glad you suggested this one,
but,
honestly. Like, it was...
No, I'm glad.
It was a good discussion topic, I think, and there were some interesting jumping off points that we got from it, so...
But
thank
I
you
also
for,
knew we mostly trashed it.
Well, but plus, enjoying movies that have potential in them is what this podcast is all about.
Yes, so...
We have a 2-to-1 don't watch, but, you know, if you really want to and you want an excuse to...
If you really want to ignore
watch.
Everything we just said.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go for it. It's 90 minutes. It's shorter than most movies
as
you
we
watch
learned,
these days anyway.
That's true.
As we learned in the Lord of the Rings podcast, nothing we say here means anything. Anyway, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/whywatchpodcast. You can find us on our website at www.dratpack.com, where we post the episodes and occasionally decide to post an article every time the moon happens to be blue. I think that's about it for our social medias. So we should probably buy this out. How do we do a jumper buy?
I got nothing for you.
Just go bye from one person to
like in sync.
Like
bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.